Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to Reanimated. It's episode 405. My name is Stuart. I'm in California. Joining me from East Coast, New York is H.A. Conrad. Good morning, H.A.
Good morning, Stuart. How are you on this fine day?
The original zombie is risen. Talking about J.C.
I thought you were talking about yourself, but...
Also me. Although, the Christian religion came a long time before I did. But it is kind of apropos. I don't know how many Easter Sundays we've recorded a podcast on, but it can't be the first one. It's just
we actually have done this a few times. So,
yeah, I'm sure.
We feel a solidarity with it. But anyway, and I think there's debate whether it's the OG, because there's also, Egyptian mythology,
sure.
Too.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's get into this episode, which is a pretty big one. I'm very excited to talk about the last episode of The Ones Who Live With You, and it really was intense, and so can't wait to talk about that. But before we get to that, we have a few little news items. This zombie movie Eddington, which is going to feature Joaquin Phoenix, Pedro Pascal, and I think Emma Stone. There's a little bit of a leak, or not a leak, but just sort of like spoilers. So they are filming it. It's going to be like timed during like the pandemic or a pandemic, right?
It's, I think, kind of specifically COVID. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like a Western tinged kind of theme. As you know, I love everything Pedro Pascal. I found this little lovely meme of him in different outfits that compared him to different mushrooms that made me really happy this week. So I continue my adoration of Pedro Pascal. So I'm obviously excited to see this. I feel like Joaquin Phoenix does these like weird films, and this is the same director who directed, was it Bo? I think he's...
Bo is Afraid. Yeah.
Bo is Afraid, right. That's with Ari Aster. And so this is, he definitely really likes collaborating with him. So, and I love him as an actor, but he goes all out. So very curious to see what happens. I guess it's been filming in like, Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, and then somewhere else as well.
Elephants Butte, or maybe they were just pointing out that a nearby town from Truth or Consequences is Elephants Butte, or you could, I guess, pronounce it as Butt if you were so inclined. Very close by, a place with interesting town names. So apparently this leak has come from a resident of the town who is sharing it on Reddit. We don't have any like real official sources though, but this film is currently filming, and we'll find out more about it when we can.
I should also throw in that Luke Grimes has also been attached to this. He was in Yellowstone. He's like one of the stars. He was also in a Navy SEAL in American Sniper. And he also apparently is in the 50 Shades of Grey movies, which I have never seen, thankfully. But, I have heard of him from Yellowstone, though I admit I have not watched that show.
That's a pretty good show. That's a pretty darn good show. I've seen several seasons of it. There's a couple of really impressive characters. Tyler Sheridan, man, just like I realized recently that he wrote Sicario, which I had not understood, and then he goes on to like create this television empire. Dude's impressive. I wish he would do a zombie show.
Well, in any case, pretty impressive cast, so I'm gonna look forward to seeing this, and hopefully we get to see this sooner rather than later. This next article made me laugh a lot because it's like Seth Gilliam commenting
on very weird. So this is Seth Gilliam doing a interview. I forget with whom, but this is on a website that I've never heard of, sportskeeda.com.
I don't know. All I can say about this is that it always feels like Seth Gilliam's like, yeah, put me in more shows, like an advertisement to get him in. Like, it's incredibly bizarre. He talks about how beautiful he thinks Daryl Dixon is, and that he'd be very open to
the
be
show.
Another,
the show. not Norman Reedus necessarily.
Not Norman Reedus, but like the show itself. Yeah, I should have said that. But the other,
well, I mean, for you, it's one and the same. To say that Daryl Dixon is beautiful is a universal statement.
I don't think anybody can argue with that. But anyway, he's It was just a very strange, like gushy, odd interview with him. So anyway, maybe we'll see him in more.
Yeah.
But
It's a collection of quotes from Seth Gilliam where he's like, "Oh, I would love to be in Daryl Dixon. That show is really beautifully shot." And then it's like, "I would love to be in the one, sorry, in the City of Dead or whatever the hell it's called." When am I ever going to remember what the
I'll yeah, whatever it is.
Maggie and Negan show is called? He's like, "I would love to be in that. I was waiting for my phone to ring and then to tell me to come to Jersey. I'd go to Paris, you know." Like he does just seem to be like eager for more Walking Dead work. I don't know.
But it
I mean,
did strike me as it almost was like, I almost felt like it was like some fan or some agent of his trying to get him placed. That's what it felt like, honestly.
kinda,
But
yeah. I don't
and
know
I
that
imagine,
Sportskeeda is going to be the place for that to happen, but.
no, but I'm imagining him seeing it and being like, oh, cringe, a little bit rough there. But anyway.
I would say the one of the nicest, juiciest parts of this interview is at the very, very end, where they're asking him like, how does Father Gabriel's relationship with Jadis match up or measure up against his relationship with Rosita, who tragically, spoiler alert, died at the end of the original or the Prime series, and I guess Jadis is now, spoiler alert, dead too. Hopefully, you know, people could hear that spoiler alert and just earmuff right away, but that's a pretty foolish assumption on my part. And he says, "I think there's a great deal of love and respect that he has for Rosita that he doesn't have for any other woman that's in his life." So basically, that smooch that he and Jadis share in the woods, it meant nothing to him. And I think that that's great. Way to go, Father Gabriel. Hold on to your values, even if it is to be like the wonky leg in a three-legged love triangle stool with
It's incredibly strange.
Sadiq. Was that the guy's name?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to compete against those cheekbones.
It really is.
Okay, but that's the Father Gabriel article. It's funny, and then it's got a nice little juicy tidbit at the end about his love life. And I hope we do get to see him in New Jersey and in France. That would be super cool. And you know, how much more improbable can it really get that Carol shows up in France? Why wouldn't she bring Father Gabriel with her? I get it. And then finally, this is actually a spoiler. I don't know how long ago the entire series of the Halo 2 second season appeared on Paramount Plus, but if you haven't seen it and you still intend to see it, maybe earmuff a little bit or fast forward. And Conrad, I think there is an argument to be made, even if you're not a fan of this video game or this show, if you haven't seen it, Pablo Schreiber. Schreiber? Schreiber? The first season was kind of good, but not great. The second season has been pretty great, I would say, especially in their fight choreography department and the storyline a little bit more. And so there's a plot line in the first video game that carries through most of the series of this additional race of, I guess it's a disease or like a virus called the Flood. And you can kind of probably extrapolate where I'm going with this. The Flood transmits from creature to creature and people get infected and they turn into flood-like creatures. They were never like really truly like zombies because they take different forms and shapes. They grow tentacles. And they're really horrifying entity to fight in the game because they tend to come at you in droves. And it takes a lot of ammunition, which is a limited resource that you have to fight them off. But there are long stretches of the game where you're doing that. Well, I guess probably spoiler, no more, but the Flood is introduced in the final episode of season two of Halo this season. And it was a really good episode. And so I might put it to you, Conrad, that we watched that just as a bottle episode. The problem is that there's a fair amount of other storyline happening that would be like, oh, I don't know what the hell's going on. But just for the flood scenes, it's pretty freaking cool. And it gives me hope that in season three, they will be doing more with this flood storyline. Yeah. So I don't know. That's kind of the long and short of that news, but I was super psyched and gratified to watch season two of Halo and see it doing better than the first season. I think they had some first season stumbling block that they had to get past, but it's a
Okay,
good
well,
show.
I'm game to do whatever you'd like to do. We could do a bottle episode or whatever. And so we can certainly talk about that down the line. And I'd be interested in watching it.
Cool. Have you ever played or seen Halo, or are you familiar with this phenomenon?
I know generally what it is, but I am not like I can't claim to be super familiar.
I have a long history with that video game, going back to when I got my first Xbox, and that was like the tentpole game that came out with the Xbox, as I recall anyway, or at least it certainly was to me. And right out of college, I had interviewed at a little company in Chicago called Bungie, to see if I could be a writer with them. And I had a really good interview, and we talked about science fiction novels, and they sketched out this idea of a planet, and this sci-fi story that they were working on, and they had a different name for it. But a few years later, it turned out to be the game Halo, and I was I never got the job, so it kind of sucked, but it was cool to have been to have heard about this storyline that they were working on. And Bungie eventually got bought by Microsoft, and now it's a international mega blaster. Mega blaster? Blockbuster. Anyway, that's all the news.
I think we should start talking about mega blasters from now on.
Only mega blasters. Well, I'll tell you what was a mega blaster last time. Episode 6 of The Ones Who Live. And this kind of solves the mystery that I think was posed to both of us at the end of during our last podcast, which was, is there another season of this coming? And I think we can answer that definitively now. Don't you?
I think so.
Yeah, the answer is no. They're done. That was it. It doesn't get much more definitive than this
What they did.
episode.
But I would also say, I think they have definitely left a door open for those characters appearing in other spin-offs.
Yes, because yes, true. But let us put that those predictions or speculative chins at the end of the episode. This one was written by Michael Satrazimus.
Oh, there
No,
you go.
sorry, Scott Gimple and Channing Powell, and directed by Michael Satrazimus. Honestly, just a team of people who know this franchise inside and out. So that's cool. Satrazimus directed the final two episodes of the series, but this one was written by Channing Powell. Channing Powell, of course, is the showrunner of the Tales from the Walking Dead. I wish they would make another one of those. We'll see. They might be done. Scott Gimple might be done. So, and then we get into the cold open, which is voiceover from several characters, a scene of some lovemaking, basically.
Yeah, also another Johnny Walker ad.
More Johnny Walker. And I'm wondering if those ramen wrappers aren't also a product placement.
Yeah.
I don't know that brand,
It's
but
a
they're
real company though, so maybe. I don't know.
maybe.
Maybe somebody just really loves that company and they were like, we're gonna do them a solid and put this in.
Like
But
these are like, remember when they did the Mountain Dew one in Tales of the Walking Dead? And
That
it
was
was dumb. It was dumb, right? It was too forced. Oh, it tastes just like I remember all that shit. But this one, it's like, you know what would survive? Ramen and whiskey.
It could be the background of some sweet, sweet lovemaking, apparently.
Or the foreground with them making sweet love in the background. Yeah,
Oh
it's
my God. It was a little silly. Come on. It was just like, but anyway.
I enjoyed the I was trying to pay attention to the voiceovers and who was talking, and I kind of missed some of the stuff that was panning through the foreground, which were like maps that they had been drawing out. Like it's a cool way to set up this episode where you know that they've had this weird love den, not weird. They've had this love den filled with candles and whiskey bottle and a whiskey bottle, and they've
Okay,
been planning and putting out their uniforms.
can we talk about the placement of those candles, which look incredibly dangerous? Like, it's sort of shocking they don't like burn up in this cabin. It's probably like 50 candles right by their bed.
Who even has 50 candles in this apocalypse? How are they finding these like untouched resources?
Yeah, it seems to be a little bit, but they're building a mood, I suppose.
They're definitely building a mood.
But it is, this montage scene of them figuring out what they're going to do, making their plan. I actually thought it was really well done and gets us to where we need to be pretty quickly.
It's a great way to introduce this episode because you have voiceovers from Rick Michonne, Okafor, whose voice I'd almost forgotten because he's been gone for five episodes, Nat, Beal, and Thorne. I think that's everybody. But because all of those people get to say something and it's lines that they said before in the show, it's kind of like their thesis statement for their character. And it really does just help you kind of follow Rick and Michonne through what everything that they're doing. in this episode. I thought it was pretty cool too.
Yeah, I did too. It was a good editing job as well. And it really, I think, we already knew that they were aligned. They are absolutely in step with each other, but this just absolutely sets up the premise of this episode that they are back, they are united, they are aligned, and they are going to go and kick some butt. So, and there is even, in part of the voiceovers, just figuring out if anything does go wrong, they're just going to keep doing what their plan is to just do what they need to do. And number one, they need to like get their, get the information out of Jadis's apartment, and then also figure out what the CRM is up to and try to stop that. So that is they have two goals, and I think that their hope is that they're going to make it out, and they're pretty sure that they're going to, or at least hope that they're going to. But there is a little bit of a like acceptance that if that doesn't happen, they're sacrificing themselves for the safety of other people, of their families and community. So,
I don't feel like they ever really addressed that.
well, they say, if something happens, just keep going or whatever. And they do know, they do say that. So, I do think that sets them up. And it's really just, I do love all the sort of, I don't know. It's kind of fun when they get to the end of this and they're going to get into the CRM base, and Rick has his, I'll admit to you, I was like, what happened to his head and why is it so weird looking? Like, what's this weird? Can he not just like staunch the blood? I still think it's weird that he didn't staunch the blood.
Like that he's still actively bleeding out of his face when he arrives 2 days after his helicopter
Correct.
crash.
And this is supposed to be, I guess, the like, oh, I was in this accident, I'm going to come back to the CRM base. But whatever, whatever.
I mean, all the stuff that's happened to him since the helicopter crash, he probably has some injuries. Like
He
he
might.
fell out of a helicopter. He fought through a collapsing building. He fought several survivors and zombies and Jadis. I'm sure he has some injuries that he can be like, yeah, this all happened to me. He doesn't have to have the self-inflicted head wound, which,
But anyway, he does, and this goes back to like, we have a grand tradition of Rick getting injured on his face and other stuff, and the consistency of the editing when we have him going through, so going through different episodes, and I would also like, and this is a slight spoiler, we get a little bit of like crazy murder eyes Rick in this,
Yeah, Beale
a little
certainly
bit of
sees
it,
that.
which I like really love, and there's also just some really great storytelling. Also the sweaty hair Rick, the whole thing that happens.
That is such a trope for this show that his hair goes from normal to sweaty, crazy Rick
In
within
an
like
instant.
6 seconds. Yeah. Oh, I love it.
But I
Honestly,
loved it.
that they did that. I hope that was an homage.
And I even wrote a note. I'm like, sweaty hair Rick has returned.
Yeah.
It made me really happy. So anyway, but let's get into it. So
There was a yeah.
how did you
Sorry.
feel when they were when we finally get them and we have Rick at the gate, and it's basically him getting back into the CRM? Like, what was your feelings? Did you feel all the feels, like excited about their?
Oh yeah, I was excited for them to like because they split up and then Michonne goes in a really interesting way to get on base. I guess because this is a fairly new base, they haven't actually really done the work they need to do to secure this location because she's able to climb a tree and jump onto a roof.
Very easily, very
Fair,
easily.
I mean, it's like kind of improbable that she could have done that without that guy hearing her who walked right next to the tree she was climbing, in all of her gear, but.
I don't know. She's
Rick,
very
I mean, and all
delicate.
Rick has to do is walk up to the gate and and come in normally as a returning soldier would. And he's immediately welcomed back with a debrief and then talks to Thorne, who's really excited to see him. I wasn't sure if she was like testing him, but it felt like she was being earnest. She's like, giving up is the best thing you could do, Rick. Let's all give up. Giving up his strength. Okafor wasn't, she says something that is completely garbage. Okafor wasn't really here the way he should have been. That's why he died. I'm like, no, he died because he got shot with a rocket in his face or his chest.
Right. And there, but again, this I think is meant to hit home how far in the opposite direction she has gone. So Thorne has completely bought into whatever Beale's vision is, or at least that's what we're supposed to assume.
Yeah, well, okay,
And
so if I have a weak link for this episode, I think it's Thorne.
yep, agree.
Because but yeah, but
Yep,
we'll get
agree.
to
We'll
it,
talk
but
about that.
she's yeah, like what you just said is how she's presented. She has gone 100% in line. She's a frontliner through and through. She got that echelon briefing and never had another thought ever since. So and that's kind of what she's still telling Rick, and she's telling him that Okafor was wrong. But I mean, how are we supposed to know? Because we never really heard Okafor's philosophy beyond just a couple of lines of dialogue. And that's when, while this is happening, Michonne has climbed up and gotten into the base on the second floor, and immediately really gets into Jadis's office. Apparently, Rick knew where it was. That was part of the mapping, because it's like not difficult for her to find her way around. She jimmies the lock, gets in there. It's full of paintings. What'd you think of her office?
I mean, it doesn't shock me, although I thought it would be a little bit more like clinical. I did notice that Seth Gilliam has a
Several.
cameo in his like portrait there.
Lots of portraits of him, I
Lots
think. I
of
think there
portraits.
was like three or four.
Yep. And a key one, like this is the thing. I it looks exactly like I thought it might look, although I didn't. I thought she would maybe have a corner, not to have the whole thing full of her art. And I do think that that gives a little bit of insight into
Yeah.
Jada slash Anne's sort of conflict, internal conflict, in
That we
terms of.
got to see play out last episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
But that being said, like I do think Michonne's like exploration of this apartment, she's making a lot of noise.
She's freaking out.
Nobody's supposed to be in there. And it's not like there's a lot of, I mean, yes, there's a lot of paintings and things like that. She's doing a very cursory search of everything. And, eventually she does find it. And it is funny that it's in that weird little dog sculpture. But I don't know. Like, even her getting rid of it, the way she's getting rid of it is like,
She just tears it up, and then she's like, I gotta pick up all these pieces.
like really funny. And then I don't know, she of course is making so much noise, so somebody eventually is like gonna come. But the reason why they figured out someone might be in there is because they tried to put something into the door,
And her foot is just
but it's in the
blocking it. Yes, yeah, she's definitely like freaking out. She's not her cool, calm, collected Michonne self during this scene. But she does just easily garrote and kill this woman who comes in and is like, oh, Commander Stokes, are you there? And then unlocks the door and walks in, which I feel like, I don't know, if I was Jadis, I'd probably be pretty pissed off that somebody was like asked one time at the door if I was in there and then unlocked my door and walked in. But cool. Either way, that woman is dead. And probably a zombie still locked in Jadis's office, even at the end of this episode.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then meanwhile, back at the ranch, Rick is getting the echelon briefing from Beale.
Well, first they do their walk out to the woods where he's like
There's
clearing the
cool.
fence line by himself. I thought that was a like that kind of thing, and is like a nice thing for to see this leader doing this menial task that he gives to the people who are trying to get into the CRM are given, this task as an early like grunt work to do, and he's just out there doing it to like clear his head, get some Zen time. But yeah, Thorne leaves him with Beale, and Beale's like, usually this is my time, but I'm going to share it with you because you've done the impossible and you came back to us. And then they go back to this like to Beale's office for this echelon briefing. Yeah, to me that was like a cool thing to see Beale out there doing that on the fence, and it takes us back to many scenes throughout this franchise of them having to clear fences of zombies.
Yeah, and I also think the fact that he shares that he didn't have to do that, that this wasn't part of his involvement in the community, says a lot of things because, everybody who has gotten into the community had to work to get there in a different way. He got there through other efforts, I suppose, but I think it also shows that he's in a different mindset than other people in the community. Basically, he got a pass on this, and so he has a different opinion, and we see that play out later in this conversation between him and Rick.
Yeah.
And then he also makes this like, it's almost like an odd little like, not it's almost like an odd little threat. Not a threat, but he's like, oh, normally I would spend this time alone, but I decided to take some time to spend it with you, Rick. And it's definitely, it feels like a test even here. And then they go back to his office and there's all of this, and I mean, Rick has his interaction with Thorne, and where she basically tells him that she is totally on the Beale side of things versus the Okafor side of things. You know, he does a pretty good job at like playing his game here with her. I don't know if she fully buys into it, but he seems pretty convincing. And then he goes and meets with Beale, and the first thing that is weird about all of this and just how it goes down is that Beale's like take off all of your weapons. And so even in just that ask, it there is a feeling where this could go one of two ways. And so he doesn't want Rick to have weapons on him, which is a little disconcerting, I would imagine.
I mean, it is, but also, and this has to be conscious, like Rick still has the three throwing knives in his harness that are up by his chest, and he has his K-bar style, like his big knife. And I, you know, this is like standard gear. So Beale doesn't ask for those. He knows that he basically still is armed, I think, even though he's still surprised when it goes the way it does. But and so Rick does a decent job of like listening to the spiel, drinking the tea, looking polite and respectful, until he starts to hear too much. And then I think his face is basically okay, but he's kind of like a duck. Right, he's like serene on the surface, but under the table, he's like moving his knife around a lot. Like it's out of the sheath; it's way out of the sheath. I'm like, what does he do? Is he gonna like tuck it under his thigh? No, he's just like gripping it really hard and moving it in different positions. I'm just like, dude, I can't believe, I can't imagine that Beale is gonna miss all of this, but he kind of does. He misses all of it until,
He doesn't see Rick's murder eyes until it's
yeah.
too late.
But
Also,
it's an interesting, what they're doing here is also like Beale is saying all these things and he's asking Rick, like, what's the hardest thing you've ever done? And you get these flashbacks from season four, season three of the show. Yeah, maybe season, it was the episode. So he goes to like, what's the hardest thing you've done? And first thing you see is him stabbing Shane. And then there's a couple of other scenes that it was some Terminus stuff. And then finally, the last flashback you get, and these are like 1 second flashbacks.
There's also Negan in there. There's all that, and then the whole thing of him biting that guy's neck.
It's and then he ends with biting the head of the claimers on the throat and ripping out his throat because they had Carl and they were about to do something nasty. And he admits like what he had done, and Beale's actually kind of a little taken aback by that, or at
Like
least
you see his face, like he's like, well, that's not what I expected.
And then later he's like, you know, I basically consigned the entire city of Pittsburgh to die, but it's nothing like ripping out a guy's throat with your teeth. That was some of that good Locke smiley charisma energy coming from that scene. I, you
Yeah,
know,
and
what a good actor that guy is.
Harry Quinn is great. And the other thing I thought they did a really good job of here, even with Rick's reactions, so I think that they did a great idea in the sorry, they did a great job in this particular scene. For you know, with Rick's reactions, but also with Beale's sort of presentation of all of this, there is a moment where you think that Rick might potentially go the way of Thorne and side with the CRM, side with what Beale's vision is for a minute. And that minute or that second is when Beale talks about how many walkers there are, what the long term reality is for the people, like the humans that are left, the survivors are that are left, talking about resources. And there's a moment in this second where it's basically like, oh, Rick didn't realize that this could be like end of days for the human survivors, or this is a surprise to him, like this is news to him. But then it completely takes the big turn, because the bigger idea and the plan is to take out all these surviving communities, which, by the way, makes absolutely no sense if you're talking about the human species surviving, because you're taking out communities that are well established. He seems to be saying that they would be doing this again for the greater good, but also because they need their resources to, I guess, keep a smaller group around, their CRM group around. And that's where you can see a turn,
Yeah. And
especially when he
while
talks
this is
about.
playing out, this Beale, all these Beale throughout this whole thing, you've got Michonne has left Jadis's office. And so these are kind of like cutting back and forth between her, what she's doing and what Rick is doing in the briefing, because she has her own briefing. She first walks into the lobby, finds a stuffed animal and gives they're like moving carts of stuffed animals. So she's like, this is pretty sus. Then she goes into this briefing room where they're talking about this operation they're about to do in Portland, where they're gonna airlift out a bunch of kids and then gas the city and kill everybody in Portland. And we kind of knew that that was what Cascadia Base was for, right? And that's
And then
basically what they're there to do is take 10% of the children from Portland, through these like spy networks that they have in place there, and then destroy the city. And so Beale is kind of unveiling his part in this and the plans to do this at the same time that Michonne is actually learning about it. So I guess, echelon briefings aren't that cool anymore. Or actually, all these people are frontliners, so they've all had the briefing before,
right.
right?
Well, and then, well, that's why they're in the room, and
Yeah.
that's why people, Rick wasn't aware of this stuff before. And Beale also reveals, which we already knew, was that they had taken out Omaha, the college campus, which we know from The World Beyond, and also talked about, how they save certain people and not others, and all sorts of things that, Rick is just, again, just totally disgusted by. And then, in addition, on top of all of this, the plan is to lock down Philadelphia, to lock down the community, to basically make this martial law, and so that people will not have the freedom to move around, that really it's becoming a complete and utter dictatorship.
Well, they all already don't have the ability or the
They don't,
permission to
but
move
like,
around. But what they're going to do is establish martial law, overthrow the civilian government, and then sweep the nation, taking out any other pockets of human life, basically, or quote unquote resistance. And so he's presenting an existential threat to, Rick and Michonne. Once if they are able to do this mission and then leave, with Jadis's, evidence hidden or destroyed, they're just like, well, crap, now we actually can't leave, because now they're proposing, not only are they going to kill a whole city of people, which I think is their first initial like thing that gets them going, they're like, but they're also planning to come after anybody else who's out there. And so eventually they would find Alexandria.
Well, and then the other thing that Beale offers up, because I think he has some inkling, he keeps talking
Yeah.
about
This
how.
is where I was like, is this going to be tempting? Because
Yeah,
it kind of
and
is.
it is. And he keeps making mention of the fact, Rick, whoever you were running away to, I will, if you kind of join forces with me, if you join in with this whole plan, anybody that you want, we can rescue them and bring them into our community, and I'm willing to make that deal with you. Because there's got to be some part of him that realizes that Rick isn't going to completely cave, and that he's hoping that this carrot will just have him complete buy-in. He's semi-convinced because he even said, oh, after running away so much, you came back. But there's also a part of him that I think suspects that or is suspicious of that. So
Yeah, you
I
can't
think
not
he,
be. This guy tried to run away so many times,
right. But man, like Terry O'Quinn does this such a great job at walking this line, because there's also this feeling where you're getting the sense that he's hoping that Rick's going to reveal another community and then double cross him. Like,
Oh, you
there's a
think
lot.
so?
Like he's crafty, and he's like, there's a piece of him that just can't trust Rick.
I mean,
And
you can certainly see it going like, oh yeah, all these people are welcome, except for the sick and the infirm and the real leader types, et cetera, et cetera.
So anyway, and
Oh,
then.
I just also had a realization, HA. Remember where on the wall by the killing wall it said Grimes 38? That was the kill record, clearly. Like
Okay,
Rick
good.
mentions it in the last episode when he's yelling at Michonne for not being a B enough. He's like, you broke the kill record. It was clearly his kill record. So she
Oh,
killed
well,
more zombies. She killed more
that is.
zombies than him.
But that isn't a very, that's not a
38. You don't
good
feel like that's enough?
record. No.
AJ Conrad could do 39 in her sleep.
Well, I think Rick could. That's the thing. That's the point.
Yeah, but he's emotional.
Yeah,
So
maybe.
emotional. Anyway, sorry. That was a red herring. But yeah, so this is kind of he puts that out there. He doesn't wait for Rick to respond to that, but he puts his hand on the sword and says, "Swear on the sword." And we get a flashback of Okafor in the helicopter talking to Rick, saying, "Don't hesitate when you put your hand on the sword, and don't hesitate or swear on the sword." I don't remember that line, but it must have probably did must have happened because it seems like it happened right before Okafor got shot in the chest. But Rick does. I mean, he's having flashbacks. He's thinking about, people. He's thinking about slashing Negan's throat. He's thinking about all these times that he acted insane or as a cold-blooded killer. And then that's when he gets crazy face, and that's when Beale sees it in his eyes just before he jumps across the table. Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. And the murder eyes and the hair. I loved the hair, the sweaty
Within
hair.
seconds,
Yep.
the hair is sweaty. He's also managed to get his prosthetic on really
Yep.
fast because he blocks a sword slash with it, and then manages to take away Beale's sword from him and stabs him through his own hand into his chest. And as he's killing him, he's like, Beale is trying to say like the weak have to die so the strong can live or something along those lines. I think it's not verbatim, but it's something along those lines. And Rick is like, "No, my son saved me. They brought me back. Love brought me back," or something along those lines. That's like that's one of
Well,
the
and
themes for the episode.
Beale makes some comment that all of them are kind of dead, and then, but that comment makes me think, I don't know, then why are you even trying so hard? I don't know. It feels like what if not to preserve some sort of joy of life and living and survival, then what is even the point?
Yeah.
But Rick basically says, I'm not dead, you are dead, and like kills him.
Yeah.
And okay, and thus some of the most hilarious scenes ensue where Rick has to like hide the body, get it out. There's like this whole thing was really kind of amazing. Did you enjoy this as much as I did?
The
Because it was
elevator
like,
scene?
yes, it's like,
The main thing I was noticing in the elevator scene, other than it being the world's slowest elevator, is both Andrew Lincoln and the guy who was playing the soldier standing next to him were breathing so heavy.
they
I
were.
wasn't sure if they'd like done their fight practice right before then, but
They
why
had.
would you be standing in an elevator like heaving with heavy breaths? And all you're doing is standing. I don't think I've ever stood in an elevator like that unless I ran to get into that elevator. But they're like amped, those two guys,
They
like in
are
real
amped
life.
up. They are amped up. I thought that they were, I mean, maybe it's just because they have a lot of gear. I don't know, but they were definitely breathing very loudly. And then there's
Their
like,
shoulders are going up and down, and
yeah.
it looks like two guys about to fight. And I don't know, maybe that's like, I don't know what they were trying to do in that, or maybe they knew that they were about to fight IRL, and so they were like, "Okay, when the elevator door opens, I'm gonna look down and see the blood coming out of the crate, and I'm gonna beat up Andrew Lincoln for a minute, but then Andrew Lincoln's gonna punch me to death through my helmet with his prosthetic hand."
But wait, but didn't he leave his hand in
He
the
did
office?
it later, apparently.
But
But
why?
he definitely, I don't know. And when did he go back
That's
there?
confusing.
Yeah, I wonder about that continuity wise, because he definitely uses the hand to punch through the
That's
guy's
what I
helmet.
thought. And then I'm like,
Otherwise, he would destroy his own fist because that's like, hard polymer.
but anyway.
I don't know why he got rid of the hand, other than to give Thorne a breadcrumb. The
Right.
hand is a helpful tool. Wear it until you get home and then make a different one that doesn't remind you of the CRM,
Right.
Yeah.
But the other thing that there's the whole thing with the dripping blood and like
Yeah.
notices it, gets it out, and then there's the reuniting of Michonne and Rick and basically filling each other in on what they've found, and
Yeah, they're basically like finishing each other's thoughts. I loved it. They're like, "We can't leave. There's a thing. Okay, we're gonna do it. All right. bombs, and then they just go off to do their thing. It's pretty cool.
And then I do love how Michonne's like, "Oh, what is this yours?" And he's like, "Yeah." She's like, "What's in there?" And there's just like a really great face. So there's like, I mean, despite the gravity of the episode, there's some pretty funny moments.
And Thorne is starting to get suspicious now. She goes out to the fence line because Rick had called her on the radio and been like, "I got the briefing. He's given me a job, but he went out to do into the forest
To
to
do his thing.
think." And then she immediately goes to the forest, apparently, to look for him. Doesn't see him there, and she's like, "What is Rick doing?" And then goes back to find him. And that's when she finds the hand on the windowsill. And then she has some flashbacks too, where she's thinking about things that Rick said to her, mostly about how he got Michonne into the colony. You've got to be the one who, brings her in. I can't do it. And she's like, "Ah, darn you, Rick. Darn you, Dana." Setting up the inevitable final confrontation. But a little bit happens between now and then. It's a pretty cool bomb that they set up.
Is
It's a pretty stupid way to keep ammunition
yes.
right next to where you're going to have your all hands briefing, because that's where all the bombs are with all the gas.
Yeah.
But they make up a cool thing with grenades, and they have Beale, who's now a zombie, and the guy that Rick punched to death, who's now a zombie. And they come up with a cool way to have those two guys pull the pins on their grenades.
And
It would have been cooler if they could have gotten away.
true. And also we have to talk about, do you think that this would have worked? And do you, I don't think Thorne would have survived this blast. Do you?
I mean, there are containers, but those things would have gotten thrown around. The thing is, it depends on what the explosive element is in the gas canisters. Otherwise, it's just like 20 grenades, and those have a certain blast radius that isn't that big. It's the explosion on the monitor, the explosion that we see is very huge. So
So,
yeah, it seems unlikely that any of those three,
would have
our
lived.
heroes and Thorne, would have survived, even with the connexes around them.
Yeah.
Probably wouldn't have made it. Yeah, but it's a cool visual to see basically everybody in the CRM gets destroyed, or all the frontliners are wiped out by the first explosion. And then I guess any who aren't wiped out are very quickly turned into zombies. Michonne did this cool thing where she like pulls down a tarp and then cuts open some tanks.
It's a fire blanket.
It's a fire blanket. Okay, yeah, but it's like the water is providing a barrier against the gas, because neither of them have gas masks. That probably would have been something they might have considered getting before
Yeah.
doing this plan. It feels like they're available because both Thorne and then later Michonne has one. I mean, Thorne came at like it was a little bit too convenient. She comes at this like right before as they're running out, like their timer is ticking basically when they run out of that tent, and she's there, and they're like trapped in an alley, nowhere to go. And then Beale comes out, and this is so during then they have this big fight, right? Like between Thorne, and like we knew this was coming. I thought it was going to be Thorne versus Rick. And
So
it
did
was
I.
a little, but not. It was mostly Michonne kicking Thorne's ass, and kind of easily too, which was also kind of fun.
Yeah, that
This was
was fun.
basically a lot of fan service going on in this episode. Like
Oh, totally.
seeing Michonne kick Thorne's butt that easily was pretty fun. But this is also when you get Thorne's big 180, and I think we kind of referred to this earlier when she's 100% like Okafor was dumb, Beale's the best. And then after she's gotten her ass kicked, she's dying. She gives Rick her gas mask and says, "Okafor was right, Beale was wrong. Never give up," or something like that. I'm just like, what?
Yeah, it felt like a little bit too easy that way. And that was, so I would agree. I think she's the weakest link in this whole episode.
Which is a bummer, but they're trying to do so much with so little time.
They are. And I cannot argue, and then there's this great moment where Rick kind of like bursts out of a pile of walkers and
With a grenade.
with a grenade. And he and Michonne are reunited, and that was kind of fun. And then we have the real like tearjerker piece of this episode, which is
God,
I did
jeez.
not think that they were going to do this. I didn't. I really thought that they were going to end this where Rick has a bite or something, or they do
Yeah.
a voiceover where it's basically like the sort of frontliner CRM thing is disbanded and people have freedom now, and it seems like the whole world is back in order. And
And
then
like Rick and Michonne just go off into the forest.
yeah.
You thought that, yeah. Instead, you get the radio. Like, it's a little too neat that you get the
Oh.
radio going on while they're flying away in a CH-47, which a big two rotor helicopter. You get the radio saying, oh, the civilian leadership of the CRM has discovered that there was this plot and they've taken over control. And not only are they going to let everybody travel as much as they want, now they're going to airlift supplies and they're going to be engaging and helping and handing, you
Take
know.
and take people into their community
Yeah,
and
everybody, it's
call
cool now.
them.
Everybody's cool. So it's a little kumbaya. I mean, obviously, the end of this is all like that. You get, Michonne calling on the radio, Choto, and you don't see Judith's face right away.
Nope.
So you still then I was like, oh, could they not get her? Could they not get the actor to
I
come back?
know. I was like, what are they going to do here? But they do it.
They do it. What they don't have is any of their old sets.
Right.
So they land in a field somewhere, maybe in Georgia, maybe in New Jersey, and have the Judith actor and the RJ actor, whose names I unfortunately just don't remember at the moment, running like wide smiles to into the arms of Michonne, and
Yep.
then having each of the kids get some lines with Rick Grimes too. And I'm sorry, but parent and children reunions on TV are like a guaranteed way to get me to get a very emotional.
Well, especially this one, and you have RJ wearing the hat like Carl, like,
Yeah.
come on.
Yeah.
And he's never met his dad, and there's that whole
He's
thing.
never met his dad. And Judith was 2, 3, 4 years old when he left.
Yeah. So.
I don't even remember which actor they had playing her at that point. This is Kaylee Fleming playing Judith, the same actor we've had for the last several seasons. And then Anthony Azor or Azor is RJ. And that's the same kid who it's been for at least a season or two also. But they look a little bit bigger. It hasn't been that long though. So they're still child actors, luckily. They're not like little adults. And it just I was totally, yeah, shedding a few tears of happiness. Apparently Andrew Lincoln really wanted this ending. So
Yes.
maybe he is why.
And you can tell how much he really loved this ending and loved the scene. And he was like really, it was really sweet. They also clean him up incredibly well.
Oh yeah.
His hair is looking great, his skin is looking good.
Sweaty hair has been put back in order.
He's got a lot of product going on in this hair. It's a pretty good thing.
He's got his hand axe on his belt, a real nice call to the comics, which is that's his weapon with his
Yep.
good hand.
Oh,
You
and we
know,
should also mention Michonne has her katana back, so that's also that was a fun
he
scene.
actually had the katana? I missed
I,
that.
well, he gave her
He
it,
gave her Beale's sword.
he did, but she's got something on her back when she goes and meets the kids. It looks like the katana. I don't know if it's the same one or another one, but even when he gives her Beale's sword, there's a really fun that's a really fun moment. So she has like her weapon of choice, although that's, not as cool as the katana, obviously. But in
That
any case,
is the katana. Oh my God. How did she get it?
I don't know, but
That's
it
super
looked like
cool,
the
though.
same one.
Yeah.
In any case, this is a really great moment. She's also in like civilian wear, like this kind of like cool little like hippie flowy thing pants that she's wearing.
Yeah.
And like I know that there's some things that we would all like to see here. Like I definitely, and this is why I said, I think they're leaving some kind of window open for cameos or something. I think that the only thing missing from this is Carol and Daryl and maybe Negan and Maggie, like knowing that Rick is alive, and seeing that reaction.
That would be cool.
But so that's the one thing I'm saying. I'm like, maybe they'll do something like that.
You think Andrew Lincoln can go from London to Paris just to film a quick reunion scene with.
Maybe we'll see. But I just think, they're leaving the door open for that. But this was a very like I thought of nice Maybe a little too neat of a way to wrap it up, but I do think it's what everybody was wanting. So I wanted it, and I was pretty psyched about it.
Yeah.
I didn't think we were gonna get it. I really thought Rick was gonna. I thought Andrew Lincoln is like, all right, I'm gonna do this, and I'm gonna go out in a blaze of glory.
Yeah.
I thought the two of them maybe thought that that was how it was gonna go, but that's not what they did, and so I was really psyched that that's what happened.
You could definitely see a version of this where they were like, this is The Walking Dead. There are no happy endings. It's gonna be grim. It's gonna be bad. But I'm glad that they didn't do that on some level, because you know what, zombie genre, you and I, we've seen enough of the ambiguous or sad or bad endings that I feel like it's okay to have a happy one every so often. And with all the struggle between these two, the years of struggle, if you look at the meta story and not just the, you know, season by season, it's been to have like no or bad payoff would have been really demoralizing. But I think this was good. I'm happy they did it this way too. I think Andrew Lincoln in the after show talks about he loves the Shawshank Redemption endings. So I think he had maybe planted a seed or at least argued for it, even though he doesn't have a writing credit. And I wonder, as the executive producer, he might have been putting his foot down.
I think maybe so. But anyway, this was like, honestly, I almost texted you when I was watching this because I was like, oh my gosh. But I didn't want to spoil it for you because I didn't know which point you were in the in your watch.
Yeah, well, it was 5:30 this morning when I started watching
Oh,
it.
so we were kind of in tandem. There you
Yeah.
go.
What a great final. Well, it's not even final because we still have Island or City of the Dead or whatever the hell it's called, season two, and we have Daryl Dixon season two. So I'm glad that there's still a little bit of Walking Dead. I can't help but watch this and think this franchise is definitely winding down.
Yeah,
It
it
gives me
does.
real it gives me real ending vibes.
Yeah, it
So
does.
either they will hand the crown off from Gimple to someone else who can be like, I can still tell stories in this universe, which I wouldn't have a problem with. I mean, it does feel like they've been milking the hell out of this dead horse for decades, and they have, but there are stories you can still tell here, so, and that I would still be interested to watch if they do them well and don't give it to Shambliss and Goldberg.
True. It did feel, didn't it? It felt like a the last hurrah, didn't it?
Yeah.
Definitely to me,
Which
it did.
is weird considering that they are still making two shows. That's the weird juxtaposition. But this definitely feels like an end to something. But you know, we've got other stuff out there still, and so Reanimated's job isn't over, that's for sure.
Well, of course. What are we going to watch next time?
Well, next time we, by popular demand, are going to be taking a look at Lisa's Frankenstein, assuming that we can get our hands on it. Have you verified that it's available?
I have not, but I'm pretty sure it is.
We've also been threatening to talk about Last Voyage of the Demeter for like a year and a half, but
And you can watch it on Apple TV, but in Prime Video, but you have to pay like $20 for it.
no problem. We are loaded over here at Reanimated, thanks to
Love
all of
it.
our advertising income.
For anything that's, zombie related, we're happy to shell out that cash.
Thanks to all of our product placement shots of Johnny Walker.
And nudes. We'd send nudes, whatever it was.
Send Nudes, that's the name of the ramen. Or is it Tasteful Nudes?
Tasteful nudes. Oh, send nudes.
Send Nudes.
No, send nudes is like the t-shirts of another ramen place here in New
Yeah.
York.
Oh God. That's great. Well, please let us know what you thought of The Ones Who Live. I think HA and I are maybe we've lost all of our perspective, but we were big fans of this one, of this series. A strong finish. Sure, we have our quibbles. We always will.
Because that's us.
That's
The
us.
way it is.
Yeah. But super strong. Really happy that they came back to do this. I'm happy that they did this instead of a movie or two movies or whatever they were going to
Yeah, I
do.
think they were able to explore a lot more in the way that they did this, and the journey was more satisfying.
And then hit us up next time when we come back, and it'll be Lisa Frankenstein. And looking forward to talking about that with you too, HA. I think we have to take maybe a week or so off because for reasons, and then we will be back and we'll have more content. But send us an email at reanimatedpodcast@gmail.com and look at the rest of our episodes that we have available online at reanimated.podbean.com.
And thanks all for listening. Ciao.
Bye.